Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. We are going to leap for the next part of the show and leading into the next hour, a conversation about what happened with Rand Paul. And larger questions that are going on and how this may is connected to the battle in many ways for the soul of America and what he's saying and whether what happened with him was a libertarian position, whether it was running from a libertarian position, whether it was racism in disguise of a free market position. We are joined in studio by Susan Jacobson Gastanaga, who is a Libertarian Party candidate for governor of the state. And she's been a resident of Baltimore since 1994 and a leader in the Baltimore area Libertarian Party since 1992.
Actually, 1984.
What did I say? 1994. 84. Okay, well, we'll give you 94, man. Interesting date, especially for a libertarian.
Yeah.
And we're joined on the phone by James Rucker, who is the co-founder and executive director of colorforchange.org. And James, welcome. Good to have you on the show with us.
Thanks for having me. It's Color of Change.
What did I say? I'm really not doing well today, am I?
I'll just start reading for you,
Mark. I need to find a new job.
No.
So, and last time I saw you, we didn't have a chance to talk much, James, was at the Free Press meeting in D.C. where you spoke.
Oh, got it.
And you were incredible.
You were very good. It was a really good event. And so I said, we have to have this man on the show more, and here you are, which is a good thing. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888 or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let's talk about what – I mean, there's been so much made of this. I mean, I – quite frankly, when I first saw it, was utterly shocked. And then I stood back for a minute and remembered – totally shocked at someone kind of challenging the idea that it was acceptable to deny someone on the basis of race to be – admitted into a restaurant or any other private facility in the United States of America.
Based, Mark, on this weird idea that it was a states' rights issue and that the government had overreached by passing civil rights legislation, forcing the hand of these companies to not discriminate.
And it was a position taken, as I remember well, in 1964 by Barry Goldwater when he opposed the civil rights legislation at that time. And at that time, I was a very young civil rights worker, so I will not forget the moment that happened. And so I just said, let's start there and talk where both of you think this is saying and what's emanating, what's bubbling up here. And I'll use the phrase bubbling up later because of a conversation I had earlier tonight with Hubert Locke that will appear on Thursday, who wrote the book, A Black Christian Response to the Holocaust. You'll see what the connections are when I come back to that part of the conversation. But let me start, if I might, with you, James, and get your initial reaction, then we'll go over to Susan Gastanaga.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, it's there's several, you know, factors in play here. On the one hand, you have, you know, the Tea Party movement. You have this kind of resurgence of, on the one hand, I would say, yeah, there's a libertarian strain to it. There's also a racial aspect to it. And again, people latch on to certain perspectives or policy positions for a variety of reasons, and I'm very excited with the other guest here to see her perspective. But you know, I understand the idea of you know, the individual having essentially the right to do whatever the individual wants to do. I think there's a social contract that comes into play when you basically have the kind of civic protections and benefits that we all have, whether as an individual or as businesses, and whether it's states' rights or it's a libertarian position, you'll find yourself often, I think, in these kinds of situations, these kinds of discussions, where underneath the surface, for a lot of the people, maybe not the prime actor, and maybe not, you know, Rand Paul himself or John Stossel, which is what we've been kind of focusing on, you know, there's this kind of idea that things happen without there being a historical context, without there being a context of a lot of people, you know, who do make a real difference in terms of how people are experiencing their everyday lives. So I think you can talk about Rand Paul's position, you can talk about what John Stossel said as a libertarian issue, but there's also a degree of either ignorance of the context or hostility to a certain group of people when you can see how this will play out because you've seen how it's played out in history. So there's many ways to take this, but that's what I think is here. I wouldn't call Rand Paul or anyone else a racist, but what I would absolutely say is, and this is why we focused on John Stossel, there's a fanning of the flames. There's giving a certain kind of oxygen to a way of thinking that, as a society, we believed was problematic, and many of us believed had actually addressed, that's now being, you know, now bubbling back up.
Jane? I mean, Susan, I'm so sorry.
Well, I first want to make it clear that I'm definitely not here to try to explain or defend Rand Paul. It should be remembered that he is a Republican. He has some libertarian, perhaps many libertarian ideas. I know a number of Democrats who also have, and in fact, I'm friends with many Democrats who also have quite a few libertarian ideas. I myself have never even once in my life been registered as a Republican. So, that said, I think I agree completely with James. And before we go too much farther, I would love to hear more about his organization, which I have to confess I haven't heard about before. But I agree with James completely that you always have to look at these issues in a historical context. Like Mark, I came of age during the civil rights struggle. I was in high school and college during that whole period. My church was very much involved in the demonstrations and that kind of thing. And so I can see, looking back then and comparing to now, I can see the tremendous positive change that not just the one law, Civil Rights Act of 1964, created, but the whole cultural revolution that accompanied it. And I think what we have to, the people who are shocked by what Rand Paul says, have to also understand that nothing is going to happen just because you pass a law. If you don't have that cultural movement, that change within society at all levels, people just changing the way they think, the way they talk about each other, the way they discuss things, all these the social norms, you might say, is not going to amount to a hill of beans. It'll become yet another law that people just put over in a box somewhere and ignore.
Well, this is Anthony McCarthy, and I want to ask you, Susan, and ask James also, what do you think is going on? Because this comment made with Rachel Maddow in a conversation with Rand Paul has taken on a life of its own, and people are trying to, I guess, get to the heart of what is going on in the American body politic that would allow a movement like the Tea Party movement. I'm sure in many ways the libertarians and other groups are amazed to see this small movement suddenly become a determining or factor in a lot of these races. What do you think is happening when somebody like Rand Paul can, to steal the Republican Party in Kentucky, said he hijacked their primary and is now their nominee? What do you think is happening when this movement actually is tapping into frustration? Is it tapping into latent racism? What's happening that this movement, the Tea Party movement specifically I'm asking about, mm-hmm. seems to have so much influence or growing influence in our political process?
Well, the Tea Party that I know personally is the Tea Party in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to a few of their events. I've familiarized myself with the organized groups that are part of the Tea Party as the Tea Party in Maryland anyway is kind of like an alliance of maybe five or six groups, many of which I can definitely support wholeheartedly. And what I see in Maryland with the Tea Party is that it's people who, in my opinion, it's definitely not racist, first of all. Absolutely. I haven't seen even one tinge of racism in Maryland Tea Party. But I see people who are many of whom have a lot of common sense. They're looking at what's happened recently with the bailouts, with out-of-control government spending, money that just isn't there and yet it's being somehow, I guess, borrowed from China and then spent to bail out people, to bail out big bankers, large international corporations and so on. They are a little bit, more than a little bit, concerned about this. And rather than taking to the streets and burning buildings and, cars and vandalizing and trashing things, they still have faith in the political system and that people who organize and apply their the arts of persuasion can actually make a difference and try to turn things back in a more healthy direction.
But Susan, before I let James chime in on what's happening, I want to challenge that a little bit. You say it's not racist, and you say instead of taking to the streets and burning things down and being angry, they still have faith in the political process. If we're talking about big government, if we're talking about bailouts, where was the Tea Party movement? Where were these Tea Partiers in Maryland that you're that you speak so glowingly and admirably about when George Bush was president? And so I have to believe some of it has to be because a black man is sitting in the White House right now and is an easy target for a lot of these right-wing people like Sarah Palin and others.
Well, you're a media person, so I think you know how a lot of this kind of thing happens, that I'm not sure if all the Tea Party people in Maryland or elsewhere were critical of Bush during that time, but I know for a fact that many were. It's now that you can spin this particular angle of what's going on, the racist angle or whatever, because Obama is the president now. It's now that the media finds there's some kind of story that they can make something out of it. You know, you can be working, for example, the Libertarian Party in Maryland has been struggling, you know, for like over 20 years, and we've been doing some good work. Maybe this will be our year that people start paying attention to us, but it's not because we weren't there.
You weren't there. That's
you
right.
You know what I mean?
James, what do you I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask James his thought. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump in. James?
Sure. Well, yeah. Great. Yeah. No, I would say, you know, I think, again, it's a complex situation. You have people coming to the table for various reasons. And as your other guest says, I mean, there are folks who are suddenly finding themselves with some organizing having happened with an amplified political voice. And I do think, and, you know, whether it's, I don't know if it's 5%, 30%, or you know, whatever the number is, there are those who have a heightened sense of we've got a problem, I do believe, because we have a black president. And, you know, you need only look at the signs, the rhetoric. You look at the likes of a Glenn Beck who racializes a lot of what is going on. So there are people who are attracted to that. At the same time, of course, that should not mean this is what, you know, the movement, if you will, is all about. However, I think there's this very strange kind of combination of we want smaller. I mean, when you talk about having faith in government, I really wonder about that because you have this idea, which is a conservative idea, right, of shrinking, getting rid of government. And I think there's a hostility to government. At the same time, there is the reality, and this is where I think you know, it happens to be showcased and talked about by the Tea Party folk. But there really is a disconnect between the priorities of everyday people. And the, you know, what happens in Washington, I may have a very different idea of what government should be doing, perhaps in a Tea Party. At the same time, I think there's a lot of truth that you have folks who've been there. They're serving, you know, masters that aren't the American people. The other thing I wanted to just, you know, put out there is what I don't understand is how a group of people, the Tea Partiers in particular, would find someone like a Glenn Beck appetizing, find leadership in someone like a Glenn Beck, and frankly a Rand Paul. Because to me, like I said, I don't know that I wouldn't say Rand Paul's a racist by any means, but if he's not, he's quite ignorant. He's not a very sophisticated thinker, and the idea that he would get the backing, and I understand he's a Republican nominee, but my understanding is a lot of non-Republicans who are backing him, that is a strange thing.
Let me open the phones here. You just heard the voice of James Rucker, who is the co-founder and executive director of Color of Change. In a few minutes, I'm going to take a short break and let James describe more about Color of Change is. For those of you who've never heard of the organization before, you should understand what that organization is about. And Susan Jacobson-Gastinago, who is with us, who is Libertarian candidate for governor here in the state of Maryland and a leader of the Libertarian Party in the state of Maryland. 410-319-8880 is the number here. Let's go to the phones. Let our listeners jump in this. Lamar, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Lamar.
Real quickly, I'm going to try and abbreviate what I want to say, but I do understand what the Libertarian Party is saying. You know, I understand what they're saying. We don't want, not the Libertarian Party, but Rand Paul in particular. I don't want the government telling me how I should conduct my private business. If I don't want to let people in the business, then so be it.
Right.
However, that was the whole argument with the Civil Rights Bill, was that people were basically discriminating against people because of their own particular view. And that's what made it a legal issue, because these people were getting subsidies from the government in some form or fashion. I mean, either the street sweepers or the pavers or the people that were making the sidewalks, they were conducting their business with the government regulations that, you know, whatever it is, taxes, whatever. So that's what made it such a struggle. So I understand, you know, whoever's view, they want to say, we don't want people in our restaurant. However, they can feel that way. That's a view. But I can guarantee, I don't see any chance of the civil rights bill being reversed.
Right.
So they can campaign on that all they want to. But, you know, Rand Paul is only going to be one senator in the Senate. And it's just not going to happen. He can feel that way, but that's not going to have any impact on it being reversed.
Lamar, you make some strong points. I think that's true. I think, and let me turn first to James Rucker and then over to Susan Gastanaga. I think it's true that Rand Paul or anybody else is not going to overturn the 1964 civil rights legislation. But there's a sense, and maybe you all disagree with this, but there's a sense that this push, this conversation about private property rights as opposed to rights of human rights and community is a fundamental discussion about the country and which way to go. And I think that the part of what we're seeing here is as I was talking about with some people this morning, is a reaction to people who see America changing in very fundamental ways and are opposed to that change on lots of levels. You know, and we were talking about it the other day. This might sound silly to you all, but my 13-year-old had a birthday on Saturday, so we took her and we went down to Six Flags. I looked around Six Flags, and I had never seen a place that looked more like America. White, black, Latino, Arab Americans, Filipinos, Japanese Americans. I mean, just this world there that was a new America. And that, I think, in many ways is frightening. There's a lot of reaction to what this new America is. And the civil rights legislation of 64, James Rucker, and then we'll go to Susan Gastanaga, in some ways is emblematic of all that for many people.
Right. No, I think that's exactly right. And I think that there's a reason why those who self-identify as part of the Tea Party are much more likely to have an issue with the president being black. And I'm forgetting the poll, but it was a mainstream poll that, you know, kind of went into detail as to what folks were reacting to in this particular moment. And I think that's right. I mean, I think you've got people losing what they feel like is a sense of whether it's economic loss, a sense of identity loss as Americans, and it plays out. I mean, we know how this is and often in our relationships. You know, there's the issue of the day, supposedly that's the issue, but there's something underlying. And, you know, I very much think that's a great point that you just made, and that's in play.
And how do you feel about that, Susan Gastanaga?
What was the question again?
Well, my question is, I think that there is a fundamental battle brewing in America over what America should be. Part of it has to do with a new multiracial America that is kind of changing literally the face of America. And it is also all wrapped up in the question of private property rights and people wanting what they thought was control they had at one point, whether they really had it or not. And I think that's part of what's going on here. There's fundamental differences between what America should be.
Right. As far as the diversity issue is concerned, I may be living in a bubble, but just about everybody I know is totally, you know, if they went to Six Flags and saw what you saw, they would just be thrilled to death. You know, I mean, to me, it's a beautiful thing. But the issue, when you get down now to private property,
The question, I guess, it becomes for people like Rand Paul, I think that he backed away from his issue because he was terrified of what he really believes, because he now wants to win an election rather than talk about what he really believes in, is that private property takes precedence over the civil rights of non-white Americans to be in the same place as the white Americans are. I think that is part of the fundamental issue that people are afraid to talk about.
Well, I think Lamar brought up a very good point. He might not even realize how significant it was when he said it, but he was mentioning that a lot of these enterprises were getting government contracts, government subsidies, and so on. And I think even I would hope that Rand Paul would agree that If you're going to take government money, the taxpayers' money, you'd better, you know, not discriminate or whatever else, whatever rules they want to lay down. You've got to hire so many this, so many that. Whatever they want to say, you have to maintain separation of church and state, whatever. But, you know, if you want to do your own thing completely and really take a divergent path, then you'd better support your own self. You know, you better not be taking other people's money to do what it is that you want to do. And that is a very strong libertarian position, too, that in many things we totally object to people who have strong objections to certain programs, for example, abortion, to have their money be used to fund such things.
Let's go back to the
phone. Can I speak to that for a second?
Okay, then we'll go right back to the phone. So Rodney and Penny, hold on. We're coming to your calls next, but go right ahead. James Rucker.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I think, you know, whether or not someone's getting, for instance, say, a government contract or engaged in that kind of benefit, we all benefit from, you know, fire protection, right? Police protection, municipalities that offer us electrical service, water. I think doing business in a context where you have certain things that are basically publicly supported in play, whether you're asking for them or not, there are certain obligations that come along with that. If you want to have a business out in the woods where there's, you know, no public services whatsoever, I think that may be a different story. But what there's the theoretical and then there's the real, and I have a hard time understanding how any business can operate in a way that means you're not benefiting. You know, whether or not if people on public roads can see your signage, right? That's a public road maintained by public funds, and you're benefiting from that. So it's hard to really, in a real sense, you know, understand how those things get pulled apart and how someone can live or operate a business in that kind of pure manner. It seems like it's fiction.
Actually, now that you say that, you know, I think you really have a good point. And it's at this point in our conversation that I really get the sense of a disconnect. Like we're just now starting to move into the area of theory and sort of cutting the ropes that keep us tied down to the ground. In fact, any business that tried to discriminate now, I mean, they would just be practically committing economic suicide. We might as well just say, here we are. We're living in 2010, and let's move forward. I said at the beginning that I wasn't here to defend or explain Rand Paul. However, I think just from the clips that I've seen of him, he's not about this point. And he was kind of like he was put under a lot of pressure. He did his best to try to evade answering it directly. Finally, he had to say something. But it's unfortunately for him probably distracting everybody from the things that he's really trying to put out there.
Go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Rodney in Columbia, you're on the air.
Hey,
Rodney.
How you doing?
Hi, well.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Hey, listen, I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they kind of feed into the same thing. And it goes towards a statement that Ms. Jacobs made. And that is, and I'm not sure, and last week I think you had a guy, Mr. Moore, on, that was kind of making some similar defenses to reference the Tea Party. The problem that I have is, where were all these people and where are they right now currently when I hear no challenge as to the amount of money we spend on defense in this country? The defense budget is, if we were to cut the defense budget by just a quarter, I think it would take care of a lot of the problems. And I don't hear any of the Tea Party people saying anything about the defense budget. Everything they want to attack has to do with social programs. And I think what maybe a person like Ms. Jacobson has a hard time understanding is when you have, when you see 8 years of President Bush, of us going to war, where we never should have been in war, I'm talking about Iraq, not once you hear any of these Tea Party people that they exist. And as soon as the demographics, because that is what's happening here, is starting to change, and you get a black president, now all of a sudden these people are coming out and saying, oh, government's out of control. Well, where were they before? When the Republicans, who are against large government, they expanded the government under 8 years of a Republican presidency. Where were these people challenging that? And that's why I have a hard time when I see people say, oh, the Tea Party, it's not. I'm not saying everyone involved in the Tea Party is racist, but I think as an African-American, I have to take a moment to pause and go, you know, where were you guys before? When this when this problem started to be out of control, when the whole bailout started under George Bush, I understand Barack Obama, the president, supported it, but where were you guys then? And that's the only comment I have. Thank you very much for taking my call.
I think it would be fair to turn this over to Susan Gastanaga first.
Yes, I'm happy to answer this. I'm not here to answer where the Tea Party was, but I can certainly tell you where the Libertarian Party was, because I'm here as the Libertarian candidate for governor of Maryland. And the Libertarian Party was very, almost every week, issuing statements criticizing Bush. If you want to know how we would cut government spending, we would start with bringing the troops home from Iran and bringing them home from Afghanistan.
Iraq.
Then we'd move on to ending the war on drugs. Those three would probably restore billions of dollars right to our government budget without having to cut back social programs at all.
James, you want to jump in on that at all?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, again, I think it's actually healthy and important to distinguish between libertarians and Tea Partiers, because, you know, they are different. But I do think, and I think you have Rand Paul, who, you know, on the one hand is a libertarian. I actually don't know. I know he's celebrated by Tea Partiers. And again, if you look at, I mean, I think your caller hit it on the head. These are folks who are not crying about defense spending. And many of them are listening to folks like Glenn Beck, who are saying very overtly, you know, the government is basically taking money from you, the hardworking, and doesn't say white, but essentially white Americans, and giving it to these people, the acorn people, the black people. And so it's you know, I think we have to, I mean, I think it's helpful to look at the connection between, say, libertarians and the Tea Party, but there's overlap, but there's also a distinction.
Anthony, you jump in.
I was going to ask James Rucker, because in doing this research, Mark, your producers really gave us a lot of dynamic information about color change, and I hadn't read it and didn't really know. But it seems to me that one of the good things that the Tea Party – I can't believe I'm saying this. One of the good things that the Tea Party movement has done, they have been able to capture the imagination of the American people. And in a way that the corporations that run the Democratic and Republican parties cannot do, and for whatever the reason, the Libertarian Party has not been able to do. They have disrupted and taken, what, two United States senators out and a congressman in West Virginia? And I don't think they're done. And so I think that they have tapped into this energy that we need to push America's politics back to a real debate, real questions, but I'm not sure if they're the ones that we would want at the trigger of all that. I don't know. What do you think, James?
No, I think that's exactly right. I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it speaks to the fact that you've got people, for various reasons, who are really displeased, one, with what's happening in Washington and how they feel basically like they're not being represented. There's also a concern they have about their lives. Now, at the same time, these are people who I don't want in control of really anything, because on the one hand, they're led by figures like Glenn Beck. There is a lot of racist rhetoric that gets thrown around, and I think that part of what people are finding, and this is with any kind of organizing, it goes from, hey, I feel bad or I feel concerned, you know what, but I'm one of 500,000 or I'm one of a million, and whatever I think the problem is and whatever I think the solution is now being basically echoed by these others, and that can be extremely dangerous, right? I mean, this is, you know, we've seen what happens, can happen, you know, at different points in history where you get that kind of thinking and you end up giving folks or people end up taking political power. But I do think it's a wake-up call. I think that you've got, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans in particular, the parties are largely, first and foremost, about serving, they build their own power, right? And they serve the needs of those, largely, who are funding them. And there's a certain populist energy that the Tea Partiers have built and have tapped into, and that's very real. It's something to understand, of course, and if you see and understand our work at Color of Change, which is, you know, largely about amplifying the political voice of Black America and others who see that as you help solve some of the problems that we're facing, you solve a lot of other problems. You see that we don't believe the Tea Parties are the answer, but I think you're right. It exposes a certain problem.
Let me go get another caller in here, if I might. 410-319-8888. And Penny, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Penny.
Okay, I've been trying to listen.
Good.
As best I can over the phone. And I guess that my call was stimulated by Obama being president and being black, and that that is triggering this reaction. I've had time to think about it, but when I heard that, my first thought was, what if we reframe that? And what if people voted for Obama for change that they did that they don't see happening, and that has triggered the energy mm-hmm. to create the Tea Party?
That's
not, I don't know.
No, that's a very interesting point.
So I, you know, so I can, and I'll take comments off the air. I, you know, I don't get me wrong. I think this company, this country, is rife with racism, and I can make a statement. You know, I can make a cause for the other side also. But if you reframe it that way, and you say, okay, Obama was the candidate for change. Now I just heard, I think it was Anthony McCarthy saying, you know, these people are hungry for change. They're not seeing change.
Right.
So how does that all come together? And I'll take my comments off the air because it's easier for me to hear you on the radio.
Penny, thanks
Thank
for holding on.
Great comment.
All three people here comment on that. I mean, and we have to take a short break in 3 minutes. We'll come back at the top of the hour and to continue. James, you can stay for a little bit after the top of the hour, correct?
Sure.
Good. But let me start. You can take us to the top of the hour if you like, and then we'll come back. I mean, I think that she raised a good point because there's a populist kind of anger, I think, in America that is right and left. And there are a lot of people who were full of hope that put President Barack Obama over the top and who also worked for Hillary Clinton because it was a woman candidate. They were thrilled about that. And they're losing faith.
Right. Can I comment on that?
Please.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to, you know, speak over anyone. No. I think one thing to recognize is that the folks who are in the Tea Party are not the folks who elected Barack Obama.
That's
they're,
true.
They're
That's
not
very good point. Very true.
We're pushing for Hillary Clinton. And if you see Glenn Beck, he started on his path literally, I think, like within a week of Obama being inaugurated. And basically, at the onset of any prospects of real change, you had very loud Tea Party voices. They weren't called the Tea Party necessarily at the very beginning, but you had these voices in play, actively undermining. If you look, you know, the health care reform, if you look at in August, right, this is when you have an opportunity for reform that most of Americans polled as being very interested in, and the Tea Party came out talking about this being socialism, this is the takeover of, you know, government takeover of health care, death panels, and so on. So it's I think, yes, you know, there are those who are disenchanted or looking for change that's not happening. I think many of them are at home. And so what I think is interesting is I think there are folks who believe that they're not being served in Washington. They see the world very differently than the Tea Partiers do, and they still haven't found yet their voice.
We are going to take a very quick break, and we'll come right back. And I want Anthony McCarthy to jump in on this, and I want to bring Susan Castanaga back on this. And 410-319-8888 is number here. Mitchell, when we come back from these comments and take this break, you are the next caller up. William in Mount Washington comes after him. We'll take this conversation in 15 minutes or so. Then we're going to leap into a conversation about why juvenile justice systems are so hard to reform in America. Stay with us at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
We are joined here by James Rucker, who is the co-founder and executive director of colorofchange.org. And you can link to that on our website and see more about what they're about and who they are. Susan Jacobson-Gastanaga is with us. She's a Libertarian Party candidate for governor of the state of Maryland. You're with us at 410-319-8888. So tell us about this. We heard from James Rucker, and I'd like to go to you, Susan, and talk about this anger that's being tapped into in America here.
You know, I don't know if this is going to relate to your question, although it's a very broad question, so almost anything could relate to it. But I think that one thing that we need to look at during this conversation, we've talked already about the tension within the Tea Party, you know, with those who might be racist and those who are not, and why didn't they criticize Bush when he was around and when he was the president and so forth. There's something going on in the Tea Party that is, I think, is at least as important, and that is their relationship or lack thereof with the Republican Party and Republican, machine Republican candidates. There is definitely a tension within that group about this issue. I've met people who call themselves, you know, part of the Tea Party movement, who for them it's all about reforming the Republican Party, and they're very upset with anyone such as myself who might, you know, run for governor against Ehrlich and threaten his chances of getting elected or whatever. And they're the basically Republicans who see this as a way to get to, you know, to win more votes and maybe clean up the party a little bit on while they're at it. Then there are the people that really want to hold – they'll say we want to hold all people, all candidates and all elected officials accountable, be they Republicans, Democrat, or whatever. And the gentleman who organized the tax protest Tea Party event in Towson on April 15th, the man named Steve Bailey, is very much along those lines. He made an extraordinary effort to get – he did his best, really, to get Democrat representation at the event. Nobody came forward, you know, to be part of it, but he really did try, and my husband tried as well. So there's that as there's that tension. I'm less concerned about, say, Glenn Beck or Rand Paul than I am about someone like Palin emerging or trying to emerge as the flagship or the spokesperson for the Tea Party movement. Now, in Massachusetts, we had a libertarian candidate, a gentleman named Joe Kennedy, no relationship to the dynasty, who ran right to the end as the libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate. And he got a lot of hate mail, a lot of pressure. All the Republicans wanted him to drop out. The Tea Party people wanted him to drop out. And he said, of course I'm not going to drop out. And the person who was elected, Brown, is really hardly any better than, you know, than just your mainline Republican, you know, your machine Republican.
Anthony, I'd like to go back to the phones and get a couple calls in before we have to move ahead. And 410-319-8888, Mitchell, you've been holding on. You're on the air.
Yeah, when Engels came to this country without Karl Marx, he says in America there isn't just the proletariat and the capitalist. He says there's a third class, and that was the black people. So, you know, African-Americans in this country were property. And so you can't talk about race without the evolution and development of capitalism. So when you have people as property, and then you have the Native American people who were whose lands were taken away from them, you have an apocalypse. You have an apocalypse to go on to accept this kind of behavior for a long period of time, that a certain segment of the population can be abused, or that land can be taken away from them, that there's a sense of anti-democratic flavor in this country when the fabric, social fabric falls down and the economic fabric falls down. So we act like the Tea Party is an aberration. No, but that's a consistent strain in the basis of American psychology. So unless we build institutions that have compassion built into them, this strain is going to continue to happen. And it historically has happened. We become very delusional to believe that these things have systematically happened. As I always talk about when I call this show, is that there always has to be historical context to things. And the historical context here is that there's a basic anti-democratic part of the American populace that is taught by accepting certain people should be treated a certain way. And it's not going to go away, again, unless we have institutions that have compassion built in them.
That's a very powerful statement, Mitchell. I'd like to turn over to James Rucker for initial comments.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And again, it goes to looking at what's the current running under the surface. And I think it does fundamentally, for again, and this is not to speak to about libertarians, but I think the Tea Party is very, very, again, you look at the demographics, you look at the way in which they talk about what's happening in this country. There's this idea that things are being taken from them and given to others. There's a notion of otherness, and that's what I think is fundamentally the most dangerous thing in play here, is that there's this idea of what America should be, that is different than, I think, the reality of America. And if we look at what's happening in Arizona, you've got a very similar thing going on there, where you've got this idea of what it, you know, I'm glad the caller talked about the taking of property. You know, people who call themselves Americans here, it's a relatively new thing to be an American here and actually be the one to say, be the owner or the holder of the property. And so we've got these very, it's about, you know, kind of instilling the rules at a certain particular point in time and talking about who's entitled to what, that just kind of belies the history. And that's where I think, you know, again, going back to Rand Paul, on one way you can look at it as malice, or another you can look at it as ignorance, but either way it taps into, I think, a worldview that fundamentally has a lack of compassion associated with it.
Let me ask you this question, James Parker, since many people want to know more about Color of Change, and even our other guest here, Susan Gastanaga, wants to know more about who you are and what you stand for. Describe then for our listeners, and given what you just said, your battles were around two things, let's say, which is your demand that Fox TV stop race baiting and fear mongering, and your demand that about Murdoch making a choice, and your demand about stopping Glenn Beck's race baiting. Talk about those. You have a number of focal points. Those are three of them that I know about.
Sure.
So give us a little bit of a flavor of what you're talking about and what Color of Change is with that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So Color of Change, I'll be brief. We started Color of Change in 2005. I started with Van Jones. And the idea was essentially black political institutions weren't able to prevent things or force government to be accountable in light of things like Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. We've actually run several campaigns, and we're powered by our members. There are over 600,000 people around the country. We send them emails, let them know ways in which they can make a difference. Fox has been a problem for many years, and we ran a campaign recently around Glenn Beck calling on mainstream advertisers to pull support from his show, and over 100 advertisers have done so. And the reason is straightforward. It plays into John Stossel as well, and that is the platform is being talked about as a news platform where news is being delivered. But what you have are things from where, you know, Glenn Beck calls the president a racist because he has a deep-seated hatred for white people, stoking, you know, kind of race-based fear in that case. You have John Stossel who says, well, you know, Rand Paul didn't go far enough. We should actually repeal parts of the Civil Rights Act. And so what happens is you get the mainstreaming of views, and this is about communicating to everyday people, again, validating paranoias and fears that are in their head and making them feel, oh, someone on TV, a public figure, is actually echoing this thing that I'm feeling that is either ignorant or in some cases malicious. And Fox has been a big problem there. And frankly, what we're looking to do is have Fox either own the kind of commentary of someone like a John Stossel or say, you know what, this has no place on our network. So that's what we're trying to do is use our members, and over, I think, 50,000 have already in the last few days basically signed a petition to Fox saying, you know, make that choice.
I'm glad we have a chance to get that before the end of this segment because I wanted you to have a chance to kind of lay out more about who you are. And we look forward to, by the way, having you on to talk a great deal more about the battles around Color of Change and having these discussions on the air. But let's go back to the phones, if I might. 4103, unless either anybody wants to jump in. 410-319-8888. Very quick thought, William, before we run out of time. You're on the air.
Yes. How y'all doing? I'm going to say it real quick. Mm-hmm. George Washington, 1789. Now, we had 42 presidents, all so-called European Americans, which forced themselves onto this land. These people had a plan back in 1789. They got a plan up to today. It's up to us to come together and do what we're going to do. We had to fight when we got off the ship. We still got to fight up to now. You talk about equal liberty, justice for all. So what we fighting of, trying to convince the people in our government that these things are wrong? How come Native Americans had to sign treaties that wasn't even promised to them? These are the same people that wrote Freedom from All, Justice. So for what I'm trying to say is the Tea Party is the same descendants of the same people that established this country and forced their views, raped, enslaved people. These are the same people. We playing the same, it's the same game, just in a different day. So I'll say it up front, a lot of European Americans are very scared because the founders of so-called whatever of America, this what we call America, now they must give up some of this power structure. The Mexicans, Hispanics, those are all descendants of Native Americans. They're back in the land now.
Okay.
So what you gonna do? So that's basically what I know. I don't have time to say everything, but that's pretty much, you know, I'm just gonna throw that out for now. And y'all have a wonderful week.
Thank you, William. And I do want to get one more fast caller in here because one of our conservative callers from Pennsylvania, Dan, has a comment he'd like to make. We'd like to hear his thoughts. Dan, you're on the air.
Hey, I guess we're running short on time, so.
But go ahead.
A couple quick points I want to make is, first off, you know, I'm Republican, I'm conservative. I'm not a racist. I'm not a hate monger. I don't believe everything that Bush did was right. I don't believe everything Obama did was wrong. But somebody asked, you know, where were we when Bush started this war? Where were we when the money was given out? We were screaming just as loud. Maybe people didn't notice, and maybe not about the war. But when that big bailout came in 2008, we were screaming about that. Nobody, we didn't want that. And maybe we weren't called the Tea Party movement, but we were still there. The other thing that really, really annoys me is everybody refers to, you know, all of us that are angry with things that are going on as racist, because we have a built-in excuse now. We have a black president, so if we don't agree with him, we're racist. We were just as upset with Jimmy Carter, if not more upset with Jimmy Carter. Does that mean we're all anti-peanut farmer? It's, you know, people have to accept the fact that people are angry with things that we see happening that has nothing to do with the color of somebody's skin or his middle name. It's just the fact that, you know, we basically, you know, we want things to start. I mean, we don't care which party. We just want somebody to step up and say, okay, there's real problems and we have to deal with them, and let's deal with them.
All right.
But, you know, part of dealing with it is also calling out and owning the racist behavior. I mean, you can't say that everybody who is, because we know that people on the left are upset with Obama. We know that Blanche Lincoln is being challenged by the left. So we know people are angry. But when you have a movement, you have to be able to call out the good and the bad. Like Glenn Beck, we've got to be able to call out when he is crazy and when he is saying things. So if this movement is to grow, the problem with the caller's statement is that when you have a protest and you have a bone through the president's nose, or you have members spitting on black members of Congress while they're not spitting on the white members of Congress that are walking by, we have to call that out for what it is. It's racist behavior under the guise of being conservative, under the guise of being angry at everybody. No, you're angry at black people. You're angry at this mentality that we have something that they are taking from us, and we're angry and we're going to stand up. It's got to be called out on both sides, whether it's left or the right. We've got to call it out. So you got to own the racism in your party as much as you own the anger and indignation that you claim to be so righteous.
I wish we had time for more. We will come back to all this again. And Anthony, you've had the last word on this subject for today.
Okay.
Only because we have our other guests waiting
for the
next
segment. That's right.
They're waiting for us. James Barker, it's been great to have you on the show, and we really look forward to having you back as many times as we can.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, James.
James Barker is the co-founder and executive director of colorofchange.org, which you can link to on our website. You can also link to the Libertarian Party on our website and see what they stand for in this upcoming election. And Susan Jacobson-Gustanaga, it's great to meet you. Have you met your husband? Lovely to have you in the studio. And Anthony and I will be right back. What's this?
That's my website, too.
Oh, well, it'll be on the, it is the website here. Oh, GustanagaForGovernor.com.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be
G-O-V on Gov, just GustanagaForGov.
Gotcha. Sorry about that. And it'll be on our website as well. And Anthony McCarthy and I will be right. We'll be right back with Senator Bobby Zirkin and Angela Converse-Johns and Kimberly Armstrong to find out what's wrong with our juvenile justice system and why it cannot be reformed. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll